Are you ready to take your selling effectiveness to the next level? Whether you might be an order taker or have hit a plateau that you want to break through, I know that the key to achieving your financial goals is getting the right support. I started my coaching program because most companies do not provide enough training or support, since what you need is a higher level of contact with your mentor to guide you up the mountain. The typical coaching program with calls every few weeks usually leaves you with too much time on your own to figure it out, and you won't get where you want to be. To find out more about my Vox with Jason program and how it will be the catalyst you need to improve your selling effectiveness, go to voxwithjason.com. That's voxwithjason.com to find out how it works and to get started today. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. On the Authentic Persuasion Show with me today is Juliana Stan Campiano. Juliana is an author, business owner, and learning architect that is curious about how and why we learn and what makes us apply what we have learned. She's spent her career selling in some form or fashion and has a lot of empathy for people that work in customer-facing roles, firing her desire to be able to help them be more successful. And we're going to have a great conversation. I'm excited to have you on the show. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here today.
Well, there's a lot of things for us to talk about, which I'm excited. One of which we were talking offline before hitting record, is you just did your first summit. I don't know if you, did you call it a summit conference?
Yeah, we called it an experience. Yeah.
Experience.
But, you know, it's definitely a conference-esque.
Okay. And what was that for?
Yeah. So it was for the Sales Enablement Society. It's the largest nonprofit association that supports people that are in sales enablement roles. So we have an experience every year that's typically in person. And just like everybody else, we made a hard change this year into the virtual world and produced a 4-day, about half day, 4 hours a day, virtual conference and experience for everybody.
Which I think is great. And what we were talking about, which I think is fascinating, is there's early on in this kind of work from home pandemic kind of shift everyone's going through, there was excitement. I know a lot of people were doing virtual conferences and webinars. People were excited to go to them. A lot of forgiveness as far as like the quality, because everyone was kind of dealing with this. As time goes by, everyone's like busy, burnt out, distracted. And then also the standard is expected to be much higher. But it sounds like your event went really well. The engagement was really good.
Yeah, I think better than we almost expected it to, because of all the things that you just said. Everybody's got fatigue of Zoom videos or even hearing from people, and like everything's become free. We have so much access to so much stuff. And so we really focused in on connecting with one another, with having kind of free flow conversations with people that maybe you wouldn't necessarily have access to on a day-to-day basis, and trying to integrate more of ourselves and people into the experience versus having to be all about some big takeaway or hearing from somebody. And that was a bit of a risk, to be frank, because we didn't know where people were going to be at. Our world's just so much in flux on a regular basis, it seems like, but it ended up going really well. People have been commenting, and a lot of the comments are about, I felt more connected to this group than I felt within any experience I've gone through this year. I didn't realize I even needed that, but wow, it felt so good just to connect with my colleagues and have chatter and banter. And the inclusion rate was really high, which was very exciting because there are people that have been coming to the event year over year and are very excited about it. But most of the people that I've talked to say, even though it was my first time attending, I felt very included into the community. So that's a lot of kind of that intangible that I think we're all looking for right now, that we were able to do a pretty good job at. And to your point, our fidelity wasn't high. We went fully live. We went fully authentic because that's very much in line with our values. So yeah, there were some delays and there were some hiccups and things happening, but everything got sorted. People got in, we got access, and we were able to overcome those things in the moment.
And people listening might be wondering, like, why are we talking about virtual conferences? This is Authentic Persuasion Show. It's about sales and sales enablement. Obviously, your society is important. We'll talk about that at the end and send people to check that out. But really, as you're talking, I see the similarities in what you did in the way that a good sales process is built as well, which is knowing your audience, knowing the value, knowing how you can serve them with what you're offering, right? Because you're selling, and you guys did a paid event, you're selling them a paid conference at a time when time is so precious. Money is almost like not precious right now. Time is what's precious, and getting people to show up and then having them feel included and building this brand and this feeling and this value with it. To me, you're talking about it in terms of a conference, a summit, an event, an experience. And I'm thinking like good salespeople and sales leaders are doing that same thing with their ideal clients.
Yeah. And that was a lot of the conversation at the conference was about sellers and what they're going through and how do we help? Because that's what sales enablement's for, right? It's enabling the sellers through this time that's unprecedented that not many of us were prepared for outside of Bill Gates, maybe, and to navigate. And so a lot of the conversations were about, this is what we've been doing and this is what's worked really well. In fact, we did this rapid fire, like, best thing you've done during COVID, just to share the learnings as quickly as we could. And from a very diverse audience, we have a global spread. We had people from around the world that attended or bought a pass so that they could watch the recordings later. And a lot of it is about how do we help our sellers? How do we engage with them? And I think that authenticity in my mind just continues to go a long way. And hopefully it always will. I think it's the core of who we are. And there was discussion about, we are via technology right now, and yet our human side has to come out even more because we are all missing that aspect. And so how do we really weave that into A, how we support sellers, but also how we help our sellers engage with customers that are going through, you said people have money and time's hard, but it's like they either have money or they don't have money. From a sales perspective, it's how do you keep those relationships going, even if they don't have money right now? Because eventually they're going to be in a position to have money or have the ability to buy from you. And it's a hard balance for everybody right now on how to do that.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those things that early on in this kind of shift that happened in 2020 is that what I saw a lot online was the advice of just be empathetic, be there long term, and just care about the person and the relationship. And part of me laughing / upset because I'm thinking that's what you should always be doing. You should always be empathetic. This is not a new thing. Yeah, now you should care because that's the right thing. No, you should have always done that. So I think that was a shock to a lot of salespeople who just think, okay, I'm doing this for the money and I'm doing it for this and that, and I got to hit my numbers versus what you should be doing, which is empathy. And then I think what's interesting though is that sometimes what I've seen is sellers go to the extreme of this empathy, which is be empathetic. And then they end up being order takers because they're afraid of moving anybody forward. Yeah. Instead of knowing that if you have value, somebody will find the funds. If not, they'll tell you when and you can plan something. But don't just assume that everyone wants a hug and no action right now.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a balance to look for. And we've been navigating that ourselves. And there are moments when it's like, hey, I'm just dropping you a note to check in because something changed or something happened this week that I have a feeling probably affected you, and doing that kind of humanistic thing. And then a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, however much time you need to go by, it's the reach out to say, I know we went through this. Where are we at? I would love to know where you're at with these other things, and kind of driving that business conversation. I also think business in some ways for those that are continuing to engage and things are going okay for them is a bit of an outlet. It's nice to talk about business because it doesn't have to do with my kids at home doing online school or like COVID numbers or whatever it is that, or the election that's happening, right? Because we have all these other things that are just so loud. Sometimes the business is the nice place to go and have a conversation.
Especially for, like you said,
those companies, which there are a lot out there, who are either maintaining, which is a success right now, right? They're even numbers. Like I was talking to somebody and coaching them last week where it's like, oh, we need growth. I'm like, no, you need to not lose, like at least stabilize it and not go backwards. And then you can move forward. And then there's companies who are absolutely just crushing it because the value they provide is needed and wanted right now. And it makes complete sense. So like, I agree with you. There's the companies, the people in business, employees who that's their shining thing. That's the part of their life that's actually winning and they feel good and they look forward to out of everything else that's kind of messy or chaotic. Was there any other gems than what you mentioned that came out of your Sales Enablement Society experience?
Those were the ones that I would say really popped. I think there were some statistics that we gathered, but similar to what you just said, most of the people that showed up, and we also did scholarships for people that had lost their job due to COVID so that we could continue to educate and keep people sharp and kind of in the loop and connected to one another. Those seem to be big things. And a lot of the companies, we did some polling while we were there, are seeing an uptick in business. Amongst all of the like doom and gloom, there are good things happening. And I think we just haven't talked about it very much.
I'm so glad that you said that because I think that's one of the biggest things. And I know if anyone follows Gary Vaynerchuk, he talks about that all the time where that's what's in the news. That's what's in news feeds. That's what either sells well from a media standpoint or people kind of get trapped into focusing on even in their own social media is the negative. But there is a bunch of positive in the world, right? There's people doing positive things. There's positive stuff going on. Everyone can focus on that or amplify the positive messages and remind everybody, then that goes a long way as well.
Yeah, I think we're extremely resilient as humans and we forget to talk about that. Definitely.
Yeah. Historically, we've been around for quite some time. We've made it through a lot of terrible things. As bad as right now seems, we've gone through similar things as a civilization, as a race, you know, civilization, even as Americans, but even as a population and a species. So, and the fascinating thing is times like this, which is interesting for people watching or listening to this, is different mindsets, right? There's the, in times like this, you figure out a way and you get resilient and you actually come out ahead because you're advancing and providing more value, or you're kind of curled up in the corner and upset. And the nice thing is you can shift at any moment and make a decision, be like, okay, let's make the most of this. If I'm not doing well at work, like what can I learn? What can I study? How can I get prepared for kind of when things ease up a little bit so that I can make more success for myself?
Yep. And typically out of times like this, a lot of innovation comes. There's space to think, there's creative moments can happen. And so I hope people are kind of allowing that for themselves as well. If it's hard or there's something not going well, how do we look for the thing that we weren't looking for?
And I think that's examples like your conference experience, the other ones I've seen, everything that's going on, TV shows that have literally adjusted from this like live game show format to people doing it from home. I mean, all that shows the perseverance of people who want to adapt and want to keep going with whatever's driving them. Yep. And I would challenge anyone listening to that is if you're struggling with it and you feel like retreating is what's really driving you. I see a lot of people getting in touch with that. It's like, okay, what do I really want and why? And then looking at it a different way and then running full speed ahead.
Yeah, definitely. And I think keeping those human connections and back to the salesperson, I think that's a lot of what is driving people that go into sales is the desire to want to help somebody, to add value to somebody else. And so how do we use this opportunity as well to just make as many connections as possible and not necessarily from an overtly sales perspective, but from a humanistic perspective, right? And saying, hey, my call rates are low this week or whatever. And I would actually just like to reach out and have a call with you and understand X, Y, and Z. That curiosity aspect, I think, goes a long way right now for understanding where people are at. And the more conversations you can have, we see as you start to gather the patterns of where people are at, and it starts to inform you and you start to have better conversations going forward and you start to help people because you're like, yeah, you know, I had a conversation with so-and-so at this company, you know, last week and I'm hearing blah, blah, blah. And so you start to make those connections and build those relationships in your network.
Totally agree. I love that. So pivoting a little bit, since that's the word of the year, so let's pivot a little in the conversation, is one of the things we were going to talk about prior to doing this. And then obviously this has kind of evolved into recent events for you, but we can't not talk about sales enablement without talking about sales versus marketing, sales versus the world, sales versus every other department. I'm just going to say it. Like, I'm not a sales biased, sales only, sales is the all knowing, all protected group in any organization. I mean, that's right. When you struggle. So let's talk about that and your experience internally, sales leader with the foundation, like all of that. Like, where do you see that right now? Where do you see that going? How do people win?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I see it becoming more and more important right now. Interestingly enough, I think especially product marketing and sales have to work more and more closely together. And it's interesting because this continues to be a conversation. It was a conversation at the conference, and it seems to be out there. I see a few more articles coming up about it. And while we all know that there's been the, you know, marketing sales kind of push-pull for many, many years, I think that some of that is starting to be like, okay, but we actually have to figure out how to work together because our clients are expecting us to do something. And I have these skills and you have these skills, and we need to have them mixed together so that we can have this stronger, more cohesive conversation set with our clients. And to your point, yes, it's sales and many of the different organizations. You could say that with the product side or whoever else it is in the organization. And sales sometimes has a bad rap or sometimes it doesn't. It just kind of depends on your organization.
Yeah.
And how you're set up. But I think that there's a lot of learning to do on both sides. And there's learning to understand that marketing, more on the general side, is about a message at scale, right? And so marketing works to really scale the message, get it out to as many people as possible to drive as many leads as possible. And sales is really about one-on-one or one to few to work through something to eventually sell something of value. And I think that messaging and how it's articulated and then how it's presented is where we have some rub. You know, it's like there can be lots of stuff created for you. And we do this even internally. We have lots of decks and slides and videos and,
right,
you know, whatever, all the stuff created. But then once you get inside of a sales conversation and you hear specificity of it from the customer and you get to understand it, you all of a sudden need these like custom types of things. You can pull some of these things that are created, but you also need some new things. And I think in part where we struggle is right in that moment of, I just had a conversation. I need these things. I have a few that kind of work and I can edit some, but I need, say, 3 new slides to be able to try to reference this other thing that I'm talking to them about. How do I get your amazing creative skills onto my new things so that my new slides don't look terrible? But as the seller, I know the content that needs to be addressed because I was in the conversation, and this is how I'm thinking about getting to the next conversation or getting to be asked for a proposal or wherever it is that you're at in that stage. And that doesn't scale very well.
No.
And I hate to share that with all the leaders out there, but there are moments when specific things are needed. And I think this is where that struggle is. It's like time and money. And how do you balance that for, and I need a few more slides that are new or custom, or I really need a video about X, or I need this thing that we have presented in this way. I need it presented in this way. I feel like that's very frustrating.
Yeah, but it's also very necessary. And I think one of the challenges, and yes, I agree, sales gets a bad rap. Sometimes it's deserved, right? I think it usually comes down from leadership, comes down from above. And there are also times where, because something might have happened in sales, or because of people's perceptions of salespeople from their own customer experiences, they go into a marketing career and they just assume all salespeople are X. Right?
Right.
And so same reason why somebody enters in sales, and I consider they end up becoming an order taker, because they're afraid of being that bad person who manipulates and tries to trick someone into buying. So they vow not to do it, and they end up too far at the other end. But I see people as well, where they get into marketing and they're just like, okay, I know, salesperson, you're just trying to get your way with me, so I'm not going to listen. But I also think, is the more they can work together and be open to it, that's so valuable for marketing to listen to sales and then make those slides or make adjustments and not just assume, well, they're in marketing, so they know better. Mm-hmm. Let sales do their thing. Like, I think both parties meet in the middle, because I've seen that organizations that do it really well, it's where sales can turn, go talk to marketing and say, I need these slides. I have this presentation. I need this value. Can you help me so it doesn't look terrible? And then they do it together. And then maybe that's something others can use as well, which I think is where the scalability kind of helps a little bit, because one tendency is this salesperson gets it, they hold on to it, and no one else knows about it. And then that marketing person is doing it 10 times, 50 times, right? And there's no sharing of info.
Right. And I think to your point, if we share the info, marketing can make sure that people have it from a scale perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think you brought up a really important piece is that, and it's sales' job as well to add the custom layer to something that marketing's created. They're not inside the conversation. They're not having it. You have to change. You have to change the deck. You have to change whatever it is that you're presenting and add that customization. And we've put together a lot of decks where we just leave the annotations up of like, this is your job. Now this is your job, is you have to edit this or get it in here and let's work together. But we're going to create this amazing kind of view for you to then add your layer on top. And I think that makes a big difference. But also to the point that you said, we've been in conversations on the flip side with sellers and sales leaders and marketing and have just heard marketing just continuing not to listen. And the seller's saying, and to one point with one leader, he just said, I'm trying to give you my time, but I don't think that you're listening to me. And then marketing saying, well, do you need these five assets or not? We just need you to listen about what the need is before you just try to put it into a said type of asset. And I think there's a propensity to want to just deliver a thing versus listen to kind of the complexity of what the seller is looking to figure out.
Why do you think that happens at that granular level?
I always get back to like how people are compensated and or how their performance is measured. It's not even compensation sometimes. It's just a lot of times marketing signs up for the creation of so many things, or they have kind of their laundry list of what they're supposed to be producing. And if it doesn't fit there, then it's hard to hear. Versus what if there's a performance based on your partnership with sales and both people valuing that relationship and getting what they need. Interestingly, we ended up creating the thing for the sales team at the time as an outside partner. And then they saw what we created and marketing called us and we had this great conversation with them. And he said, how did you know to create that? And I sat there for a minute and I was like, we just listened. The team's only part in that was to make this person successful. Right. And so we listened. And we created the thing and he was thrilled. And then they took that. And so what they did is they took the thing that we created and they were like, well, we want it to be available for everybody. Can we use it? And we said, sure, of course you can. So there's your scale, right? And then they took it and created it for more people to use.
Well, and I love in what you're talking about, because it comes down to motivation, which could be incentivized, right? Carrot or the stick, could be reward-based, could be, you know, punishment-based, which organizations usually go to one of those extremes. But what is the motivation? And then what is the intention? And it's interesting in your story about the marketing side, and then also thinking about the sales side, is if your goal as a seller is with the intention of helping the other person have value, build value, get to a better place, either out of pain or to succeed with their goal. Mm-hmm. My opinion and experience is you'll always be successful long term, right? When you're coming from that place, because you're going to help people move them forward. And it's not going to be about pushy and manipulative and end of quarter numbers and slashing prices. It's about value. And then same thing, like I could see what you're saying. If marketing is aligned with sales from the top down, and the goal and motivation of marketing is to make sales look good and to win so that everyone wins, then it shifts from busy, right? Which is what happens a lot of times in operational or marketing roles, which is we're busy. The goal is to be busy and the goal is to produce widgets. No,
as many as possible.
It's to be productive and produce the widgets that then make a car, because what we want is a car, not just a pile of widgets. And I think that's where the shift comes in organizations who successfully move everyone in the same direction.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I think that question, just a lot of it comes back to that performance management layer of how people are at the end of the day, were you successful in your role or not? And if we align them to everybody's success and to the company's success, you're going to end up with company success versus just individual successes.
Which is great. And my podcast before was called the Sales Experience Podcast. And the reason why I named it that is, for me, it's all about the whole sales experience, which starts from marketing, goes through sales, and then goes into what most people call customer experience, which is then the actual doing of what you just sold. And I have led organizations in the past where I am the VP of sales, marketing, and ops all at once, because it's one customer. There is no silo. The customer doesn't care. Yeah. It's one journey. And if everyone's not rowing in the same direction, then who knows what's going to happen.
Customer facing roles, if you can get all those areas aligned, there's some magic that can happen. And I believe we're starting to see more and more companies shift that way, that are larger and more legacy, and the new ones coming up do it inherently. So it's going to be really interesting to see, I think, over the next 5 years, how it continues to evolve.
I agree. And that's where I think, and I'm excited by this RevOps, Director of Revenue, VP of Revenue Operations, that person who's ahead of sales and marketing, and sometimes customer service, retention, anything that has revenue in it, aligning that at the top then gives it the best chance of succeeding.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree.
All right. So let's pivot again. Let's shift. What do you think it means to be authentic?
Ooh, it's a great question. I think it means showing up. My mom used to say this when I was growing up, and I think this kind of stuck. She would say, if you don't feel good wearing it, don't wear it. And I think authenticity is like that. If something doesn't feel good, it shines through. And we talk a lot about, like, it leaks out, you know, if you're not comfortable with something. And so I think being authentic is being honest and having integrity and so many different components, but it's saying you don't know if you don't know, or it's saying, yeah, I've had a lot of experience with this. Let me share that with you. There's just so many things, but it's really being comfortable with who you are and showing up as yourself. I know many years ago when I first started my business, and there was a lot going on at that time, I feel like, about like your work self and your home self. And I never understood that. The whole concept. It was like, why would you do that? That sounds terrible, right? And yet we do it constantly, and there's masks that people put on, and it's terrible that we feel like we have to show up that way. But I think showing up is who you are. And I think we as leaders and people in society in general have a big responsibility to accept somebody when they're being themselves and not to judge that. And I think that's the hardest part, honestly.
And I wonder how much of that, as you're talking about it, is coming from the fact that people don't want to admit their problems or their drama. Some people do. Some people love going into the office and just talking about their problems. But others don't, or they don't want to get in trouble, or they don't want to be seen as less than, which then could impact their career. And I think one of the biggest things that affected me and helped me with this years and years ago is when I felt like I was going through a lot of storms in life, and it was like, why is this always happening? I realized it happens to everybody. Everybody is either going through a storm, they just got done with a storm, or they're about to get hit with one and they just don't know it yet. But the fact that everyone thinks whatever they're dealing with is only internally and no one would understand is bogus. Most people can understand. And if they can't understand and they're not empathetic, it doesn't matter if they know better or not, they're just not going to be. And so, not that you got to run in the office and share your drama, but life happens. That's what I've been telling people with this whole thing right now with work from home. Somebody walks in, like even right now we're recording. If somebody walks in or you get a phone call, it's life. Like, it's just life. It's not all perfect scripted mode. And the more you can come from that place and just accept people and situations, it changes things.
I think it changes dramatically. And if I look at it across my business, and I would agree, like, it's not about coming in and sharing everything that ever happened to you, but it's about being real in the moment and showing up the best we can, and also saying, hey, I'm having a bad day. And I think I was reading somewhere recently, but it's recognizing that, right? And so you know yourself really well, I think, when you can show up and be authentic and you feel comfortable with that. And you're right, there is no perfection. There's striving for excellence in my mind. There's good days and bad days for everybody. And when we're able, especially as leaders, to show up and somebody says, hey, you know, X or Y is going on, and you go, okay, great. Thank you for telling me, because now I can help support you. And, you know, we can get through it, because I know the next time somebody else needs something, you're going to be there for them. And that's kind of how we roll, at least at Oxygen. And we work through those things. It's not a, oh my gosh, I can't believe, this thing's happening, and we're going to have to deal with it. It's like, yeah, of course. And we're going to get through it. And then we're also going to celebrate the great things that happen along the way.
And I think a lot of that comes from having a why, having a reason, not capital P purpose in life, because that's usually tough to get your hands around, but some reason why you want to show up every day, some mission and values in an organization that's tying everyone together. And then the rest of it's just life, right? Like, there's bumps in the road, but everyone has a bigger thing, then hopefully you'll get through it. If someone can't get through it and they're always drama, then it's probably not the right fit for the organization. And that's a different conversation, right? How do you see persuasion having fit into your success in sales, leadership? Where does that fit in?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So I learned and have read Cialdini a long time ago, and he's got his principles of influence and persuasion being one of them. I think that persuasion, to me, a lot of times is the passion of the value and what you're going to add. And what I see, at least from my own perspective in the sales that I've done over the years, is it's that like excitement to do something different, bringing people along and getting them visualizing what that could be is really a persuasion that is fun and everybody wants to be a part of. I think persuasion can have an interesting connotation, right? It could be very positive or very negative. And I think we all know that for being inauthentic, the persuasion is the wrong one. And I know that we've all done that because I have kids and I watch them do the same thing that I did try to do to my parents.
Yep.
That persuasion that you're like, it's never going to work.
It's never going to work because I know it's just coming out of the side of your mouth and it's all a lie. So stop trying.
Yeah. And it's like, and it's a bad idea. let's just put it out there. We all know that that's a bad idea. So I think it's when there's that real, true, positive thoughts or vision of what could be that makes persuasion a really kind of a high sometimes even to be on.
So based on that definition, I'm curious what you think when sales people, sellers, are ineffective at persuading clients to move forward at the right amount, right? Not just every buyer, but the right buyers that should have moved forward. What are they usually missing when it comes to the persuasion piece?
I think it's probably the authenticity is not going with it. That's my guess. They don't really believe in what it is that they're selling. Ironically, when I first started Oxygen, because I bought Oxygen over a year after it started there. It was a UK-based company, but I got turned down 3 times in the process of interviewing. And I was supposed to be a large account rep for some of the larger accounts in Europe. And how I interviewed was not how a typical salesperson would interview, right? I wasn't necessarily money-driven and motivated.
Got it.
But I believed in what we did, like, obviously greatly, because I ended up buying the company and continuing to create and grow in the US. And that just didn't resonate. It was like, well, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to talk to everybody I can about how amazing we are and what we do, because everybody needs to have this. Right. I had such a like maybe naive passion about it, but it was that I was actually selling them a lot in the company that I was in already, and it was that excitement and that passion and that showed up that is why I've been successful. So it's just kind of interesting to think that that was seen as not being a positive at the time.
And I can totally understand that, having dealt with a lot of sales managers and organizations that are hiring. And what they're looking for is the classic boiler room Wolf of Wall Street answers, which is, I want to make lots of money, and here's how much I want to make, and I'm willing to work hard to make lots of money. And money is a scoreboard, and it's a good vehicle, and everyone needs money to do the things they need to do in life. And at some point, that will either fade or not be enough or lead to the wrong intentions for why you're doing it. And I think there's a healthy balance with what you're saying, which is being an evangelist for whatever you're selling, knowing there's value, knowing you're excited about it, and also knowing that you should get paid for that, because otherwise it's volunteer work, which is a totally different bucket.
That's right. There was no way that I was going to do that, but I was less concerned about hitting a number. In fact, I told him at the time, I said, don't tell me what the number is because I don't want to just hit that number. I want to just like plow straight through it. And yeah. if I know the number in my psyche, I'm going to be aiming for it. And I don't want to aim for that. Like, I think you have to find out where people are at and why they do what they do and what drives them and really yeah. hone in on that versus some potentially false theory we've set up about people.
I love it. So what was it that you wanted to be when you grew up?
I thought I wanted to be a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I wanted to help people.
Okay. Which is fascinating. I think so far when I've asked everyone that question, that's probably the closest to something that could lead into a successful sales career, right? you know, yeah. versus like basketball player or, you know, football coach, something like that. Like,
I watched, my father is a lawyer, but we're Native American. Mm-hmm. He worked for the Bureau of Indian Affairs pretty much my whole life. And I watched him lead more than anything, I think. I thought that's what being a lawyer meant, was just this interaction with people and helping them navigate things. And it was very different. So I talked to somebody yesterday. I went through the LSAT. I took it. I went and visited schools and I was like, I can't do that. Got a job at a large law firm. And I was like, well, I'm going to go see what it's like to actually be a lawyer before I commit to more school. And definitely not meant to be a lawyer.
Not for you. But it's interesting because I look at professions like the legal profession, medical profession, and when they're operating in a certain way as a professional, guiding people to some destination of hopefully making things better, right? Medical, it's easy because getting somebody healthy. When a salesperson, a sales professional copies that profession, then it's amazingly different results from a completely different place when it's done, that intention.
Yeah.
What is your definition of success?
Ooh, that's a great question. And I love that you ask what my definition is, because I think we make blanket assumptions about what success looks like for people.
Yeah.
Success for me, and I think this is really what drove me with having my own company, is creating a place that's successful from a business perspective in a healthy environment for the people that are working there. And I think we have way too little of it in our corporate space in America, at least.
Yeah.
And I think it's unacceptable. So I wanted to prove that both could coexist, making money, driving revenue, and a healthy environment.
I love it. Last question, the journey or the destination?
Oh, definitely the journey.
Yeah.
I'm way too old to be infatuated with just the destination, and it keeps moving. The destination keeps changing, which is great because of the journey. So, yeah.
I love the age qualifier. That's a fascinating. Way too old for the destination.
I mean, the interesting part is from where I came from growing up, like I've hit a lot of my mile markers, right? And I was young. And all of a sudden it was like, well, now what? To your point, like, okay, I hit these bars that I had for myself. This is interesting. And so it is about the day-to-day and in my mind, how you show up, and much more so than some falsely perceived like mana that's going to happen.
And when you hit enough of them, you realize like there's more beyond that, and it's nice, enjoy it, appreciate it. But like, that's not the final stop, right? There's always something else. So Juliana, thank you for joining me on the show. So some things I know that you've done out there and people can find you. So you have a book that you wrote, Radical Outcomes, How to Create Extraordinary Teams That Get Tangible Results. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Like, this is one of those things that along the journey, I never thought this would be something to do. Right. Right. Yeah. So wrote a book and it is all about that. How do you create a teaming environment that's healthy to drive business? This is directly aligned with kind of my view of success and passion.
Yeah. And who's that best for?
Anybody that's a manager of teams, sales enablement teams, learning teams. There's a lot about, or services organizations, marketing. They can totally read it.
I love it. So Radical Outcomes, they can find it on Amazon. And then your company, you mentioned it briefly, they can find it at oxygenexp.com. And who's that for? What would they find there?
Yeah, sales enablement leaders, learning leaders, that whole space from an organizational perspective. I think this also ties into, I want to help people. It's all about the service of people in your organization.
Okay. And then you have the society. So sesociety.org. So for the Sales Enablement Society. So anyone in sales, sales leadership.
Sales enablement again. Yeah.
Yeah. Love it. And then lastly, you are very active on LinkedIn, which is where we connected. So people can find you on there. Anything else? Anything else to add?
I think that, Jay Stan Campiano, and you're going to find my Twitter. You're going to find all sorts of things. Probably there are not many people that I'm not related to with that name.
I am going to guess you're probably in the top rankings for that online.
If people can remember my last name, then it helps.
Exactly. Well, Juliana, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate you and your time and all of this and what you're doing for internal with your organization, with your employees, with sales, and helping elevate just the way sales is done and hopefully shifting it from that dirty word kind of mode and helping people do it right. So I appreciate you more than you know in helping that message get out there.
Thanks, Jason. It's been great to be here with you.
Yes, thank you. And for everyone else, if you want to become an authentic persuader, if you want to check out the book, Selling with Authentic Persuasion, go to authenticpersuasion.com. You can also find me. I am currently the number one through probably number 10 ranked Jason Cutter on Google. So you can find me there, which is always fun. And until next time, I will see you on the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.